Great, great. Hey, what were a couple of the sounds? There's three quarters of the way through, right before a voice goes blah, something. Yeah. There's a building, a bass sound.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, it's actually, I had another song where I had this, I did this like, oh, and I was actually, I recorded that through my speakers again, but I slowed it down super crazy on my DJ equipment, and I put on all these effects, and it almost sounds like an airplane or something, in my opinion. It just, it took a whole new form, and I just used it again, but it was like, I don't know, nothing the same at all.
Yeah, yeah, I really noticed that sound this time listening to that song. And after that, there's a bass drum sound that's a really nice. Where did that come
that's
from?
That's all from the beatboxing. That kid is a pretty incredible beatboxer, yeah.
Great, great. Wow, great, great music.
Thank you.
And I think that song didn't have your voice on it.
No, not at all.
Okay. I've loved some of the pieces that you played me that have your voice and your lyrics, and there's some that have your girlfriend's voice on them as well. You don't have to play that now. You can if you want.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear some more music.
Definitely.
This is, I'm speaking with Oliver Tree Nickel this evening. He's here in the studio.
Thank you.
Your voice sounds so great mixed with hers.
Thank you, yeah. It's
really nice.
It's my girlfriend of on and off 4 years, so we're very close. And I'm going to be leaving her soon. I'm about to move away in a week. But we our voices go together pretty perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel that the male and female voice together belong together. I feel like, I don't know, both of them complement each other in a very special way, especially mm-hmm. two that are in love. You can definitely capture that and feel it mm-hmm. on some level.
Mm-hmm. Are there some, when I hear your music, I'm thinking of some bands or composers that have similar qualities, and I discovered that you have no idea about those people that I've listened to. And it's been fun to share some of my music with you. Are there bands or composers that you have drawn ideas from, contemporary people?
There's a lot of people, but I'm forever changing, and my taste is forever changing, and it's accumulated so many people that I can't really pinpoint it down to any single artist or group that, I don't know, I take a lot of inspiration from all kinds of people. Van Gogh once said this quote, good artists borrow, great artists steal. And I love it so much, I say it over and over again, because it's true. I mean, no one has invented, I didn't invent any of that styles or anything there. I didn't necessarily steal it from anyone, but it's just like, you take little bits from everything, you add that together, your own take, it's your own taste of it, and it's just like, it's totally different. Everyone has their own take.
Do you remember what the first music was that you heard in your life? And either music played on a stereo or just sound happening around you, your first experience with sound or music?
Looking back, it's pretty hard to date back all the way back then, but...
It's 18 years ago.
My parents, I'm sure it was mostly music my parents were playing, and I would say they have good taste, but as a child, every music that they played, I really, for some reason, I thought since my parents liked it, I shouldn't like it, for some weird reason. And so, I don't really know why, but my parents would play something, even like a band like Radiohead. I remember I was maybe 11 years old or something, and my dad was playing Radiohead. My brother's like, put on Radiohead, and we're in the car, and I'm like, turn this off now, and I'm screaming, and then like 8 years later, here I am, I love Radiohead, they're a great band, but I think it was just because my parents liked it, and I was like, this is not cool anymore, I don't like this at all.
Well, that's a familiar pattern for a lot of us. Whatever our parents liked or wanted us to do, we stayed away from it. That's one of the bands I'm thinking of when I hear that last piece that you played, is Radiohead, especially your vocal quality, a real sweet emotionalness to it that I really like.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How about some more music?
Yeah, definitely. This next piece I'm going to play, I made with my friend. He goes by Heart Tricks, and it's a pretty interesting piece. I feel like we tried to make a journey, a long journey, and it travels through day and night. It's almost like I would consider it almost it goes through a whole war and a battle and death and the rebirth and almost like a funeral, and it's sad, but it's also, there's also hope. There's a new light. We all are living still. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to describe, but this song's called Osmosis, and it's a journey, I would say, and it goes somewhere, and then it goes somewhere else, and then it kind of comes back, and all the singing and stuff was sampled from Brazilian music. I just sampled it and made it totally different, but it's a pretty interesting piece, and I made it a couple weeks ago with my friend, so I'm going to play that one next.
A lot of weirdness. You're tuned to the stream of freakradio.org. This is Robert Norris, and the name of the next show, as some of you well know, is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's me talking with a lot of people on the streets at an Occupy Santa Cruz. The protest has been going on now for, almost 2 weeks at the county courthouse on the San Lorenzo benchlands in order to reclaim, restore, revamp, and revolutionize the broken system that we live under. At least that's what I'm hoping is going to happen. I suppose different folks have different hopes. Stay tuned for lots of interviews in the last 3 or 4 days. That's mostly what we're going to be listening to. I did have a guest, but he had to leave town. He was an Occupy Santa Cruz guy. We may be able to get some folks in there here from Occupy Santa Cruz. Who knows, by phone or by telegram, by telegraph, by Pony Express. But if not, we'll have their voices. And good news is that Free Radio Santa Cruz should be back on the air at least, I'm hoping by Sunday when my show comes up again. I do a morning show from 9:30 to 1, 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. And by that time, we may actually have an operational transmitting Free Radio Santa Cruz again. A special thumbs up to Sandino, Uncle Dennis, and other cohorts who helped to get that antenna up after many streamy but no broadcasty show. Let's go directly now, though, to, without any further ado, musical intro, old socky, sabi, schlocky tunes. No, thank you. Instead, we're going to go directly to some recent interviews. I think the most recent one is now Sunday. Right after the last show, I wandered down to Pacific Avenue and got a little of this.
I'm out here on Pacific Avenue on October 16th. It's about 20 to 2. There's a protest against GMO. 70% of food contains genetically modified organisms, GMO food, danger.
They bought them out.
And I think someone's trying to signal you, Scott Graham. He flashes the peace sign as he eats genetically. No, you aren't eating anything at the moment. So we have an update on the smart meter.
For that, just a quick note, the GMO parade, protest parade, which I guess was announced on IndieBay.org, that's Santa Cruz Indie Media, which I suggest people follow since I do a lot of writing there, and so do others, particularly that fine photographer Alex DeRosi, who I like the work of, and other workers to other. I think Matt Dott's done some photos there. Bradley's put up a lot of stuff, good stuff on IndieBay.org, particularly for following Occupy Santa Cruz. In any case, the genetically engineered food protest, I think it was, I only saw, maybe 20 or 30 people with signs. They were all on the sidewalk. Nobody was in the street, but maybe they felt too small to take to the Pacific Avenue. I always feel that's a helpful thing to do, generally speaking. But, let's hear more of the actual interviews that came up as that happened, as this parade passed by. You may recall, those of you who are regular listeners, we've done shows on the controversies around the forcible installation of smart meters by a Wellington company with PG&E using them as their front group, in spite of the county's Board of Supervisors' regulation that such installations be postponed, if not banned, until, I guess, at least after December. I have to admit I don't have the exact wording of the law in front of me, but they're supposed to be banned now. And because the sheriff is refusing to do that, is refusing to enforce that law, smart meter folks have started a recall campaign against Sheriff Phil Wowak, and I've talked about that. But let's go back to the Pacific Avenue and hear some discussion about that and other subjects.
Phenomenon and the Wowak recall. Okay.
Well, the
war.
Yeah, the Wowak recall. That's an interesting situation. I actually had a one-on-one conversation with Wowak for an hour.
How'd that go?
Understood his position. Can't say I agree with it, but we understand where he's at now. He's not looking to make waves. He's not looking to go outside the box, and he's just playing.
He's not looking to enforce the law.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not outside the box. That is the box.
Well, that's it, and he's happy. happy with his place in the box right now.
I see.
So a nice gentleman, and he took the time to meet with myself. So
was it a now that don't you feel he wasted your time? I mean, how did you gain from that?
Well, understood. At least could sort of scratch his office off the list as people that we're going to work with on this. So at least
you
no,
know
don't
beforehand.
Need to, no, well, one thing he did offer to do was he would work with us on a red tag type scenario where we could actually place signs on analog meters, somewhat with his endorsement to give a little extra strength to people's signs when they hang them on their analog. So potentially, if an installer removes a meter with that sign, they may be actually violating the ordinance. But we'll have to see if he actually follows through with that.
Now, of course, we're talking about Sheriff Phil Wowak, who is supposed to be enforcing an ordinance passed by the Board of Supervisors, which bans, as a moratorium at least, on the installation of the so-called smart meters by the Wellstone crowd in the unmarked white cars or trucks are running around.
Wellington.
Thank you, Wellington, Wellstone. I know what it is. So, but this, what's been happening?
That way PG&E...
This is Scott Graham butting in.
PG&E can claim they're not installing the smart meters. That's why they hired this outside group.
They didn't want their guys in their PG&E suits out there being the bad guys installing the meters. So they had up front do it. Yeah.
I know that we've had at least one guy who had his camera smashed by an irate Wellington installation guy, and the police refused to take a report from him. And in fact, I think he himself has been unable to get the police report. That's Alan Fisher. Any update on that?
Actually, no update on that. There is one really important thing that people should know, though, is right now we have a number of people who took matters into their own hands and actually removed their smart meter and replaced it with their own analog meter.
Uh-huh.
And now we know exactly what PG&E's position is if you do that.
And what is that position?
They will bluff and say throw all sorts of threats at you as far as that you did something criminal, that there's going to be fines and such, but in the end they do absolutely nothing. So we're encouraging everyone who is on the fence about taking out their smart meter themselves, go for it, do it, because PG&E has no law right now where they can actually charge you with anything, and they actually end up, if you don't cave to their threats, they actually treat you like a prince or princess, king or queen. We actually have one woman who did this, and they actually gave her a free month of electricity.
Wow, take out your smart meter, get a free month of electricity.
That is the moral of the story. That's what we're learning. So anyone who wants to do it now. The PUC and PG&E can't do anything about it.
But how much does it cost to remove your smart meter and put in an analog meter?
The analog meters cost about $50, and there are places you can get them. There's
Real Goods.
It has them. Or Riverside Lighting, I believe, has them, too.
Go over here to the PG&E yard, sneak in from the Yacht Harbor, and they have a whole bin full of them. I actually have two of them that somebody gave me that stole them from there.
No, the Scanner's police department. We will give you this man's name later.
I am not condoning that, but that's an incredible bit of information they actually have bins of them there at the yard.
Yeah.
Do you know where those bins are going? Are they going to the...
According to a friend of mine who actually works for PG&E, he said that they all end up going to Milpitas and get tested and to see how accurate they were. And if they were inaccurate for the customer gets no money back. But if they are inaccurate against the company will send the people a bill saying, "Oh, your meter was inaccurate, and we need
your information.
We need to give you this bill." They can only go back like 6 months or something, and say, "Okay, but your meter was inaccurate for the last 6 months, so you owe us this much money."
Really?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to share our contact information after this, because that's actually news. I hadn't heard that story, and that's very interesting.
Yeah, they're testing all the old meters, supposedly, to see if they were accurate or not.
Because what PG&E is saying is they're disposing of them as quickly as possible, because they don't want to have any possibility of going back to analog meters ever again. So they're saying they're gone, disposed of, can't use them, we don't even know where they are. So.
Well, they probably do dispose of them once they test them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they dispose of the ones they find to be inaccurate, because they may need to keep them in case somebody challenges that. Now, they don't test the new meters to find out if they're accurate. And the local TV station did a test where they had one of the new meters hooked up to a house alongside an analog meter, and the smart meter was wrong every month. And they actually had the analog meter tested beforehand to make sure that it was KION or whatever it is, the one TV station did it.
Well, that's... Yeah, that's the information. I want to talk to you some more about that. But definitely right now, anybody who's thinking about swapping out their meter, right now is the time to do it, because there's no law. It's total limbo land, and PG&E and the PUC cannot do anything against you.
Has there been widespread? Is Santa Cruz completely smart metered, or is it still going on? What's happening with it?
Most of Santa Cruz City is smart metered. Now, like Live Oak, SoCal area is pretty much covered. Now they're doing like Rio Del Mar and La Selva Beach. I think that's where most of the deployments are. So it's kind of moving south through Santa Cruz County is where installations are going on.
We've been talking with
Jeff
and
Scott.
And for more information about stopping smart meters, go to
stopsmartmeters.org is the best place to get information, especially with what's going on locally.
And for pro smart meter propaganda, go to
there's a wealth of it at pg&e.com, and we can debunk pretty much every piece of information listed on that website.
We'll see about that. Thank you very much, both of you. So it's about 6:15 on October 16th, 2011, Sunday evening, down here across from the county courthouse on Water Street. I see Noah at the Occupy Santa Cruz scene. There's signs littering the lawn. Kerbugger Chris or Commander X is at the top of the steps of the county building with a large sheet and the Fed. Got to get closer to read it. Something about war on poverty, and I'm looking at 10, 20, 30, 35 people spread out around the site.
This again is on 4 days ago on Sunday the 16th.
We have 100% Occupancy America. It's on. Democracy is not a spectator sport. And the table is set up there. I see see Paul, the labor organizer, walking back and forth. And looks like a mixture of men and women. And the occupation continues. We're talking with a man who's been observing the General Assembly shenanigans. I'm not going to say who he is, but you say you've been observing?
Yes, there was a proposal today to move the right of an individual to put a proposal to the General Assembly to take that away and make it that he has to go through a subcommittee.
Subcommittee!
Yes.
Ah! Okay.
They're putting the hierarchy ahead of freedom, burying it in subcommittee, but it was blocked successfully by three blocks.
Were you one of those blockheads?
No comment.
No comment. Very well.
I do believe that consensus is for Quakers and real anarchists vote.
And so, in other words, in spite of the effectiveness of the block.
No comment. There is a free radio meeting tonight. If Robert Norris wants to get discounts on his dues, he could attend. Which is where I'm headed right now, by the way.
I have one left.
All right.
Keep this.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary. I probably am, yeah.
All right.
I haven't had this.
Hey there, Lyrical. What are you doing behind this questionable table?
I'm just being here for the people, man, you know. Easing my inspiration, you know, showing my support, and just being here.
How long have you been here today?
I've been here probably maybe like 2 or 3 hours.
And what have you seen of any note?
We had the General Assembly, and pretty much people have been gathering in different groups, talking about different things and settling their conditions. And that's pretty much it. I've just been here. I've been doing some little spoken word. And just, you know, being here, supporting the youth and being a part of this. But, you know, being here.
Well, it's always nice seeing a non-white face occasionally at this protest.
Yeah, I'm glad to be the non-white face. That's what makes me feel so good to be here, because I'm trying to show that more non-white faces can be here, too, and supporting the same movement. So for me to be here, I think it's just to let people know that we're here, and this is affecting everybody, from black to white, Latino, and everybody. But if I'm going to be really honest with you, black and Latino has been affected from Wall Street a very, very long, long, long time.
And where is the black caucus here in Santa Cruz?
I really don't know. I don't see them here. So I don't really know, because I don't really speak to them, but they're here. And hopefully they'll come out here and support, too, and every other organization, and give us support.
Have you done any poetic ventures on this whole thing yet?
Yeah, I did a performance. I did two performances yesterday. And I did a couple of late-night spoken word performances, freestyling and stuff. But I've been very active with the public and using my talent for them. So.
Do you have anything, any quick ditties for us now or not?
Well, this is not going away. And it's not, I don't think it will not go away, even when the media or whatever. I think there's still going to be people that are going to not have places to sleep, jobs, and there's still going to be conditions. So what we're doing right now is a very important thing, but there's still more work to be done. There's still more organization. And I think long as the youth and the old come together for one thing, for one agenda, gets to the one, then we'll be all right. But we're all scattered, then we're going to have to work on that and get on the same page so we can get things done right.
Thank you, Lyrical Eye.
Thank you, Mr. Robert Norris.
All right, man. You're from Riverside yourself. We're talking with...
My name is Elliot Kim, a.k.a. Eli the Alibi.
And you come up after traveling around a bit, but you note that Occupy Riverside had 150 people?
Yeah, I'd say between 100 and 150 people for the first General Assembly. That was unfortunately the only one I've made it to so far, but I have some friends there who were there last night, said police presence was minimal and cooperative. There was a good showing. I think about 30 to 40 people stayed the night, which is a pretty good turnout for
how
a place.
How long have they been doing it?
Just started the 15th, so... yesterday. Yeah.
Beginning is, I know I've read a whole number of people, cities began today, small cities across the country. I don't even remember who they were, but every day, more and more.
Keeps growing. It keeps growing. It's encouraging.
And what do you think of this, what you see here? Any comments?
I think it's beautiful. It's people coming together and sharing information and changing the way we think and relate about each other and the world, you know.
Is that happening?
I like to think it is. Maybe we'll see.
I don't know. All right. Well, thank you. We've been talking with
Eli the Alibi.
Thank you, man. So I see we have many books here that weren't here before. Brain Quest, Backlash, The Plague by Camus, The Crucible by Miller. Somebody wants to open up a library here, I see, which is always a positive thing. I think we're a book lover.
The L.A. Library was in joy.
Actually, Occupy L.A.?
Yeah, the Occupy L.A. Library. And also, I was in Occupy Oakland on Friday night briefly, and I was really impressed with what they got going on there.
You've been to both those recently?
Yeah, in the past week.
Wow. Cool. Stay in touch. If you have a cell phone, let me have it, and I will at some point contact you perhaps and try to... say hi and find out what's going on.
If you're ever in the area, if you're ever in the area, man.
I don't have a cell phone. I do have a pencil and paper. Hang on. Next with you. How old is this puppy?
This puppy is 10 months old. He's rapidly becoming a man dog.
And how can you tell? He's getting more social with the women?
Yeah, and he's got balls. He's really after this one here. This is his girlfriend he met yesterday.
He's wanting to get the pooch over by the steps.
She's got a few pounds on him, and she pins him really readily and rapidly.
Now, you realize that dogs are not allowed in the park. Have you been violating the park codes again?
Well, as creatures of one God, we're kind of all here on this earth to be together.
You've been sleeping in the park as well.
I try not to sleep whenever I cannot.
We're going there after dark.
Whenever I can avoid sleeping.
I see. We're talking with
who?
Give yourself a name.
We're talking with Andy Moskowitz.
And Andy, were you at the so-called General Assembly today?
I was at the General Assembly, yes.
Anything happen there of any note?
We've established a couple new working groups, I believe. We have... new homeless outreach group. I think we're trying to better establish relations with the more entrenched and less participatory homeless population of San Lorenzo Park. We also have a
And the I haven't heard too much about that group actually existing. There has been some back and forth about, well, either friction or a good feeling, depending on who you talk to, between homeless folks who were there before Occupy Santa Cruz arrived and will be there if and when Occupy Santa Cruz leaves, struggling to survive. And that's, of course, one focus I try to get into on this show. If anybody has any thoughts on any of these issues, by the way, you can call in. You're listening to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, soon to be back on the air. The phone number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. This is a live show. We're broadcasting on October 20th, Thursday evening, so feel free to give us a ding-a-ling.
What was the other one we made? A camp coordination committee.
We're going to slow speed here, folks.
Yeah, we got a new camp logistics committee as well. Nothing too big. A few proposals were...
Is there a camp ordinance committee for accumulating weapons, things of that sort?
That was not discussed at this
assembly. Apparently not. Your weapon is the truth.
Our weapon is peace, love, and community. Really, our weapon is free association.
I think Freud had a similar approach. It's a different kind of free association. So, anything, no problems with the police, deputies, anything like that?
You know, they're still around. They're still waving their threats around, but they've held off thus far.
Now, were there recent threats?
I can't speak to when the last one was. I know for sure there were serious threats a few days ago.
I heard something from a lone police officer went to the park and threatened people that they'd be back the next day, but then they didn't return. And then I saw the deputy lieutenant schmoozing with the folks here, I guess it was day before yesterday, perhaps, Friday afternoon. So I haven't heard of any threats since then, but then I haven't been, I just got back here. It's been away for a couple of days.
And indeed now, 4 days later, when I was down there last, which was last night, Wednesday evening, on the 19th, I had not heard of any subsequent police activity. I have written a bit about, I think, the importance of not trying to get too close or cozy with police and deputies, not to be too eager to try to meet the so-called conditions that they come up with, because... At least initially, we found that the deputies, or that was my, it was my impression that the deputies and the Santa Cruz Police Department, they were making conditions that either involved complete exclusion of people, exclusion of sleepers, exclusion of signs, exclusion of tables, and it was only after people said we're not going to leave that they backed down and said, oh, okay, well, I guess there is a First Amendment in Santa Cruz since you're insisting on it. They didn't say that, but that in essence was what was meant. And similarly, there was no real interference with the large protests of last Saturday, and that when people began to sit down in the road, and some folks decided that was not a good idea because it hadn't been consensed on by the General Assembly or whatever, or they had the General Assembly had consensed otherwise, and I don't like this mainly, I guess it's two things. I don't think the General Assembly can consent on this kind of stuff. And then, secondly, I don't like the idea of trying to stop people from these specific kinds of actions, which I think are very important, because, frankly, ultimately, you want to draw in as many people as possible with a new form of power, and that is the power to say no to the existing system. And that may mean, you know, blocking roads and things of that sort. It's done in other countries. It's been done in Santa Cruz in the past. It not only is traditional, it's an obvious move. And when people say, oh, no, the police department says you can't do that, you'll ruin everything, it's a backward step to believe that you're somehow, your best bet is to ally yourself with the police department and these kinds of issues. You obviously have to make decisions on the spot as to what you want to do when peaceful civil disobedient actions happen. But to simply say, oh, well, let's go talk to the police about this. There's something that happened around this that activist Steve Plach and I severely disagreed on, and I've written about it on indiebay.org on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, which I encourage people to look at. And that was on that Saturday when various stoppages when people stopped and sat down. Steve Plaich was urging people to get up and move along. And then finally, toward the end, he actually went over to the police and called the police over, claiming that the reason he did that was because he wanted the people to move. He went to the people and said, what do you want? And they said, when are you going to move? He said, well, we'll move when the police insist we move. And so he went over and told the police that that's what they had said. I mean, I don't know. Steve, who I have a lot of respect for in other ways and some disagreement with on other topics, I think made a boo-boo there. And I single him out to talk about him because he's a very high-profile figure. He's on the legal committee. I think individuals in positions of high visibility who command a lot of respect need to be called on stuff when they are, at least in my view, making mistakes. So I'm saying this for that reason. Similarly, we had an ACLU meeting, which I'm going to report on, where I was distressed at Steve's approach there, although Steve is in a dual role. He's running for city council, as regular listeners know, so he's a politician as well as being an activist, which can put someone in a rather ambivalent position. Kind of conflicting loyalties.
Yeah, well, we never really know what's going to happen as to law enforcement. We can only assume that we're comfy here as long as we are comfy within ourselves.
Here, here. Again, we've been talking with
Andy
and
Radix.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm with Free Radio. You two have recently become interested in Occupy Santa Cruz?
I'm interested in Occupy everybody.
Indeed. And how long have you had this pathological interest?
Since I was born, man. I don't know. You know what? I don't remember.
And you saw the protest as you were going through town yesterday. And
I did.
And were impressed with it, right?
Oh, I was. It was huge, and it was orderly, and it was spirited, and it was great. It really was. It was great to see it in my own town.
So. The Sentinel claimed that there were dozens of protesters.
I think there were tens of dozens, maybe hundreds of dozens.
300 to 1,000 is an estimate I heard, but I wasn't there for the protest.
Oh, you know, I think there were absolutely 1,000. I mean, it went on for blocks and blocks and blocks.
And when you joined it, how long were you with it?
Honestly, just a few blocks. I was downtown for a different reason, but...
But you came tonight to see what was going on.
Came tonight to see what was going on and to bring you all some food.
And, of course, this is the Sunday after the day after the large Saturday protest that happened last Saturday.
Thank you very much. And we're talking with...
Marion Brodkey.
Thanks, Marion.
You're welcome.
Well, here's a man with a sign that says... Don't forget to exist. And the other side of the sign says, sleeping is not a crime. Are you outdoors, a criminal sleeper guy?
No. I got a nice place, but I think it's really horrible, and it really makes me upset. And, you know, my name is Flying Bullfeathers, and I'm a light being and an earth guardian, and I'm here because... You know, people are being arrested for not having homes, and the system doesn't work, and, you know, and people got to stop doing that. You know, can you stop harassing people because they don't have wealth because the system doesn't, you know, work for them? So, I'm here because I believe that we should be allowed to be here, you know, first of all, you know. We should be allowed to be here.
Now, how long have you been with the protests?
I'm off and on, you know, but my energy is here all the time, you know. I might start camping out, you know, right in front here. I think everyone probably should. I think we should all join because people are, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing when you come out here and you get to meet and talk to people and get to know your community, and your community can help you and you can help them. I brought a stew out here, and everyone ate it, and I got to eat other people's cooking, you know. And, you know,
did you ever go into the teepee?
I got to step into the teepee today, and it was really neat to look up and see how it's arranged. And I think that is the way that we should be living. It leaves a much less footprint behind if people could just be sleeping outside if they want to be. And yet, it's legal to do that, you know, and people are being arrested.
Is a porta potty been found, or are people still, should we say, making their own way to waste disposal areas?
I know some people are using the bar, you know, the girls are going to the jury room and stuff, but some reason I come out here and I get so enthused with everything, I don't even need the you know, human plumbing, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's when your heart is buzzing, when you're a light being, you know, Earth Guardian, you don't need to use the bathroom, you don't need to you know, breathe or eat or anything. You can just stand around.
I see your t-shirt says, keep staring, I might do a trick. How should I keep looking?
You can keep looking. The people on the radio, they can keep listening to your radio show. And I might call in and do a trick sometime. I might have done that before, maybe even.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We've been talking with
Flying Bull Feathers, Light Being, and Earth Guardian. Thank you.
Thank you, BBF.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Yes.
Blind Best Buffett. Friends forever.
All right, man. We're talking with
Noah Shepherdson.
And before we hear Noah Shepherdson, who's often facilitated those meetings, I'm going to do a quick update. Occupy Melbourne is sending out Twitters. 11 minutes ago, the Twitter is, police have been brutal. Horses used as battering rams. People punched in the face. Unnecessary. 15 minutes ago, it seems to be a bit of an issue with a link. Under my riot police helmet, no one can tell it's me. I've belted 10 ferals so far. Wow. Interesting series of different... police horses pushing crowds back. Chance of peace maintained. Then 2 hours ago, Occupy Melbourne, we are surrounded by police. We're about to be arrested. 38 minutes ago, CFMEU workers have burst through cop lines in Melbourne. Reports that the MUA, I think that's another union, but I'm not sure, Solidarity Forever, are on their way. 43 minutes ago, police using horses to batter protesters in Swanston Street. Straight out brutality. And it's quite something on the Twitter line from Occupy Melbourne. Continuing, however, with Santa Cruz, where as of the moment, all is, as far as I know, peaceful. Though, of course, I haven't got any direct reports from there. I'll try and actually get a direct report as we continue these early reports. This one is from Sunday at Occupy Santa Cruz, and we're listening to Noah.
So you were there for the lengthy protest, which the Sentinel said had dozens of people.
Yeah, it was massive. It was a huge relief from my perspective to see such a great turnout after, you know, just being with this for, you know, the past week and, you know, hoping that it would grow. And, you know, yesterday was a relief, definitely.
And how did the General Assembly today go?
Today's General Assembly was very good, you know. They went through a number of proposals and, you know, some of them got talked about at length. And, you know, it's always a process. It's definitely challenging.
I hear they tried to sidebar different direct proposals into a committee system, and that was blocked by certain extreme Democrats in the group.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely frustrating to see what might seem to be simple proposals get tabled. But, you know, like I said, it's a process, and so, you know, I'm happy to watch them go through it and just try and work it out. You know, I mean, this was one meeting tonight. We'll have a meeting again tomorrow and continue to work on these issues, and it doesn't all have to be done.
Are more marches planned on a... I heard something about daily marches. Is that true?
Not exactly daily marches, but eventually we want to get to a point where we have, like, daily or, you know, every other day actions. We have some great ideas that came up in the direct action working group tonight, and none of them are marches, and I'm looking forward to seeing them implemented.
Any tree sitters with tree climbing equipment that might help to restore Free Radio Santa Cruz to its transmitter?
And in fact, that has happened. Tree sitters have moved the Free Radio antenna. As I said before, Free Radio should be up in a few days.
Put out the word if you can.
Yeah, we'll get right on that. I don't know.
I should be going to one of their meetings even as we speak. Again, we've been talking with...
Noah Shepherdson.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you.
We're talking with...
Rachel Williams.
And Rachel, you're about to take off in your vehicle, perhaps to get a bit of a bite to eat, perhaps to stay warm, but you've been here for how long?
Today, I've been here since about 1:30 or so.
And you've been here since...
about that time, too. But we've been here the whole time.
You sat through the entire General Assembly?
Yes, and we've been here since the movement here in Santa Cruz first started to Tuesday.
Coming to every General Assembly?
I think I've missed three.
Now, how was this particular General Assembly? Anything interesting come up?
Well...
We'll pause from the Sunday General Assembly to talk to activist David Silva. Hey there, David.
Hey there, Uncle Robert.
And were you at the General Assembly today, the one that happened
for
the...
Well, I was at the, you know, there's these working groups that meet at 5 and 5:30 to try to get things together for the General Assembly, get their homework done and stuff like that. It's kind of turned a little bit of kind of a lobbying effort of people pushing their ideas, but that's all right. I guess that's sort of how democracy is done.
What kind of
a lot of people have a lot of strong ideas. I think we have to keep it simple.
David, what kind of ideas are you pushing?
What I'm pushing for is that we try to continue to grow, that we occupy, that we actually try to have some kind of a power effect, that there has to be an eventual effect. There has to be an effect on an election. There has to be an effect on some laws. There has to be some kind of changes. I don't think we should let go of this at all until there's some changes and adjustments made. I think there's accountability. I think we have to come up with a whole new economic order worldwide. New economic system, excuse me, economic order is, I guess, a bad word since the Bush years, but you know what I mean, a new economic system, and you know, I'm Green Party, so I believe in true cost pricing is the route to changing the...
I know, David.
False value system.
David, I know you were doing Cafe Huff yesterday.
Yeah.
Hang on, slow down. With Becky Johnson, that was, of course, a place where you were providing coffee for the coffee-starved protesters.
Done it for a couple times now. We need to keep that growing. We need more volunteers. We like to have that 24 hours. There's a lot of people that have watched those steps 24 hours. There's a lot of people that watch the camp 24 hours. We need coffee there 24 hours.
I'm
sheltered now, so I'm okay.
Now, have you had much contact with the homeless folks who have joined on to the, who are also camping at the same campground, I should say, the same park area, which has become a campground, that the Occupy Santa Cruz tents are up at, and there's this huge teepee up there, too.
I spend more time there than I do in the General Assembly. The General Assembly, I usually just go and I start and I do arrangements and I participate in the agenda to participate in, you know, vibes watching, and I sort of drift away, and I really find myself more comfortable at the alternative action, which is, you know, the Occupy Santa Cruz by camp. You know, I believe the camping, that there needs to be more tents. Anybody that's a veteran out there, veterans will give you a free tent.
Now, has there been... I've gotten some reports of friction between homeless folks and activists who find the homeless lifestyle or who are... There's some problems I've heard. I'm not getting too clear what they are.
There's some naivety on the part of some of the organizers, but most of the organizers are so good at conflict resolution that they can do really well handling it issue by issue. But I would say that they managed to push away about 3/5 of the homeless and attract 2/5 of the homeless to be actually kind of very loyal, and I think they've also managed in the process of keeping the hard drugs and the soft drugs in separate camps, actually having a lot of people cleaning their act up to be a part of Occupy. It's been quite an impressive thing to witness.
How many tents have you counted down there today?
Oh, it seems to me they're reorganizing them all the time. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. At least 20-something, you know, but there seems to be more. It's just they're closer together now, and there's some bigger ones, too, now. And there's more groups of, you know, there's not just 2 people tents anymore. And the big, large medi tent, you know, anybody's not feeling well, you know, go in that medi tent, there's lots of herbal teas and things, and herbal remedies, not only Band-Aids.
Uh-huh. Now, have you seen any politicians hanging around the protest?
Del Darling is I guess sort of the main force in one of the working groups. I see politicians all the time, but they seem to mostly come and go. There's only been a couple that have been constant. You know, Derek Darling, Steve Leach, and Ed Fry are constant.
Uh huh. There's been some concern about conflict resolution when the occasional outburst happens. Somebody kind of freaks out and so forth. Are people finding new ways of addressing these issues without doing things like calling the police or
beating
people
up.
Good
thing you asked, because actually that is one of the main successes of this whole event. That there's so many people that are experiencing conflict resolution, and there is a just general tendency to give and let go. Everybody's burnt out. Everybody has a bad day, and everybody can freak out. And even the best of us, I guess, probably can yell out and scream sometimes. But we all have to just sort of accept that they're going through something and just keep on going. They're using sort of a green process. They have a vibes watcher now. It's one of my suggestions that they picked up. And the vibes watcher is there to catch when people start getting edgy with each other a little too soon. You know, you call vibes and just sort of like back down, everybody back, shake it off.
Well, I know there are vibes watchers at meetings in General Assembly. Is he talking about a 24-hour vibes watcher or, you know?
Oh, at the campground, there's more sort of like a lot of self-appointed marshals, and everybody knows everybody more. There's been some people that are just, you know, persona non grata, and they know it. But, you know, even the most flagrant people, you know, Patrick, how dramatic and operatic he can be, you know, with his ideas. Just he comes down to the campsite every once in a while, and there's just people that they just take turns handling him. And once you let him know that, you know, you appreciate his ideas and how entertaining he is, he seems to be okay. You just can't challenge him.
Uh-huh.
There are people like that. There's that problem. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're mixing, you know, homeless populations, on cheese and other medicinal herbs that are having sleep deprivation problems and doing all kinds of having trace a lot more issues than the people that just come to meet on the steps.
Well, I'm not sure why
just being all coffeed up.
I'm not sure why the homeless would have sleep deprivation problems. I mean, after all, they can sleep during the day, can't they?
No, actually not.
Really? But let me ask you about that. You were outside for what, several months before you got...
A few months, yeah.
And in fact, are you even in housing yet, or you're kind of struggling to get there?
I am couch surfing right now. I should be in housing by next week.
But, I mean, have you gotten any reports of how the police are treating homeless people who are beyond the periphery of Occupy Santa Cruz camp and protest?
I not only have reports, you know, I walk this city every morning quite a bit, the whole city, and I've seen it. They're treating them worse everywhere, except it seems that the Occupy Santa Cruz is becoming an exception zone. And even the hard drugs area part of the Occupy Santa Cruz, the by the death pond, and the drunk area is more of an exception zone. They got yelled away. The sheriff's nearly got yelled away when they tried to take the tents down over by the duck pond. They're being pushed back, but they're hitting the other homeless much harder.
David, when was that yelled away situation? When did that happen?
Yesterday morning.
Wow, would you actually see it, or did you get an account of it?
I was part of it.
Tell me about it, kind of blow by blow, if you can.
Well, the sheriffs were coming out there and telling these people they had to move their tents, and I said, it's not this time. I said, not this time. I said, you know, you're a servant of the people. I said, you can serve to protect them, but you can't serve to move them. That's torture. That's human deprivation. That's deprivation of sleep. It's torture. It's over. That part of the game is over. Go away. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. And everybody joined me and started yelling. Leave them alone. They left.
And what time was this?
Just before the Huff meeting.
And this was we're talking Huff. It meets every Wednesday at 10, usually at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 10. But I guess yesterday it met at the American Cafe in the basement of the county building.
Yeah, I was
building.
On my way.
But I mean, when that happened, are we talking about a separate encampment to the one that is all around the big teepee?
There are a few other, you know, more satellite encampments that you know are a little looser and you know, their behavior, the drunkenness, and so forth like that. Things they're more looser behavior is allowed, but those still have a sort of a shroud of a special protection. Whereas as soon as you get on this on the city side of the river, the homeless are being cracked down on harder than I've seen since I've been here.
Now,
everywhere is they're cracked down real hard.
David,
they're taking their bags, they're pushing them around.
David, which side of the river are we talking about?
I'm talking about the city side.
Sorry, you mean Pacific Avenue side. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, once you get off on the other side of the river, it's a different story.
Well,
the homeless are being treated worse, Robert. Homeless are being treated worse this past week and a half.
And what have you seen that indicates to you that that's the case?
They're taking them more of their bags. They're pushing them around, busting them up, moving them up. When a lot of times they just sort of like stroll by and just say something, you know, clean this up or, you know, don't mess up or something. Instead, now it's constantly, all the time, I see them being busting people. It's like citywide. It's not just, you know, they're just like doing sweeps here and there. Everywhere they're pushing people along, moving people along, busting people, taking away their property, going through their property. I'm seeing a lot of it.
Now, what we need to do, of course, is start documenting some of this because,
yeah.
I mean, did you see any of this in the last...
I can't be the only one noticing the increase.
Did you see any of this, and if you did, where in the last 2 days did you see this happening?
I've seen it over by CVS Pharmacy. I've seen it over by PetSmart. I've seen it over on Pacific Avenue. I've seen it over by across from the Elm Street Mission. I've seen it over by the Red Church. I've seen it over by Beans and Rice. I've seen it over not so much around Sub Rosa or down there, and I've seen it around the town clock, little places where people have been hiding and just sort of been quiet, you know, are no longer safe. They're just hitting down. They're hitting down. I think they're trying to raise up the ticket count on this side of the street so they can make it look good for some bureaucrat later, as if they had some kind of control on the other side of the street. I don't know. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't look right. It's too intentional, Robert. There's something going on. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they're trying to prove. They're probably trying to rig the numbers.
Now, I've heard about a homeless outreach group happening at the Occupy Santa Cruz, but then I heard that there were no meetings of the group, and haven't found anybody who's a part of it. Do you have any indications of what's going on there?
Yeah, I know people that are part of it, and it does meet, and they've been given a motion, or not a motion, a consensus yesterday by the General Assembly last night that they continue to be autonomous, that we are in alliance with them, and that we recognize that they face much more encounters with police and problems that they have to be able to have on a moment's notice, so that they should have the autonomy to do that. And if they need any help in alliance fashion or they need support, come to us and report, you know, the help that they need. And they've been meeting, and so far they just go over and ask a few questions. They don't seem to... They are pretty self-sufficient. There's some really experienced people there, you know, cooking and everything.
Well, if you can, get some of their phone numbers so we can get in touch with them.
Because it's a growing organization. It's really, really, really interesting.
It sounds good. Anything you want to add before we let you do,
whatever
you want to do?
I'm tangled in a dog's leash. Okay, there you go. Sorry about that.
Uh-huh. How are doggies being treated in the park, by the way?
Well, they seem to be treated fairly well in the park.
Doggies are illegal in the park. I want you to be aware of that fact.
There's a lot of doggies that come. Well, you know, whenever someone tries to nestle down and sleep in the park, it's an issue. The police, from the very beginning, that's the first people they get picked on, was the people with dogs. But more and more, the police are staying away and leaving people alone in the park.
That's good.
It's just more and more noticeable. I think a lot of people that first came that had dogs, you know, probably just... maybe discouraged, but I think it may grow. I love dogs. You know, I feel safer with a dog around myself.
Indeed, that's I think
why. With a dog around than a security guard.
Indeed,
security guards are just little Nazis. I don't know where they got all these little Nazis. I didn't know Americans could raise so many little Nazis in such a short period of time.
It's the system creates that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah. Okay, Uncle Robert, I got to catch a bus.
Hey, thank you,
I'm off.
David Silva.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was David Silva, who's couch surfing, was outside for several months, returned to Santa Cruz from Central Valley after an absence of about 5 to 10 years, and he was really quite active in fighting the sleeping ban when he was here. He was a Green Party activist, very articulate. He's a person with HIV who takes a lot of medication, if you wonder why he speaks so rapidly. And it's stress can have a lot of impact on him, and he's been quite a remarkable job of maintaining under a lot of pressure and also being a source of information. My hat's off to David Silva. Thank you for that that report, David, even though he doesn't hear me thanking him. So, again, you're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. A call-in number here in case you have your own report about what's happening, or your own criticism, or your own news flashes, you name it. You can call in here at 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. And if you want to catch me off air, maybe you have some thoughts about what you want to be on the air, or you have some questions, you can catch me at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. 4833. That's an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Group I work with, and group under Becky Johnson's leadership with David and Becky last night. We're providing a coffee galore at Cafe Huff out there, a table in front of the county building facing Water Street. Let's get back to, I guess it's Sunday, the Sunday at the...
Well, it went smoothly as they've been going for the last few.
Did you...
I didn't seem to go too smoothly, but perhaps... I have to find out what's going on here with this tape. Sometimes we have these little problems. They come up. I see what the problem is. We reach the end of the tape. We just have to turn it over. Sometimes it's simpler than it looks. So we're going to getting back to the as soon as we get a little hopefully a little further into the tape. We'll be able to hear what's happening.
So, an interesting thing, one of the side buildings, which is a courthouse building, for the first time ever I've seen posters posted, community watch area, police not welcome. For every girl who is tired or acting weak when she is strong, there is a boy tired of appearing. For every girl who is tired of acting weak when she is strong, there is a boy tired of appearing strong when he feels vulnerable. For every boy who is burdened with a constant expectation of knowing everything, there is a girl tired of people not trusting her intelligence. For every girl who is tired of being called oversensitive, there is a boy who fears to be gentle, to weep. For every boy for whom competition is the only way to prove his masculinity, there is a girl who is called unfeminine when she competes. For every girl who throws out her easy bake oven, there is a boy who wishes to find one. For every boy struggling not to let advertising dictate his desires, there is a girl facing the ad industry's attacks on her self-esteem. For every girl who takes a step towards her liberation, there is a boy who finds the way to freedom a little easier. That's a poster. Looks like it's Crime Think. One word, THINC, Crime Think, is the website for those who want to get a copy of that. Shadow of the Past Holds the Future Hostage is another poster. And here's one, Your Life is Your Life. Don't let it be clubbed into dank submission. Be on the watch. There are ways out. There is light somewhere. It may not be much light, but it beats the darkness. Be on the watch. The gods will offer you chances. Know them, take them. You can't beat death, but you can beat death in life sometimes. And the more often you learn to do it, the more light there will be. Your life is your life. Know it while you have it. You are marvelous. The gods wait to delight in you. And there's another poster, Capitalism is Doomed. Capitalism is a Pyramid Scheme. These are sort of more elaborate posters. I'm just reading the large print. Capitalism is Armed Robbery. No more prisons or police against the surveillance society, and welcome to the police state.
Now, these are all posters that were put on the end of the jury assembly room building. I've never seen anything ever posted there before. It's sort of like, I don't know, writing posters about sexual abuse by priests, posting them in the Catholic Church or something. The Church of the Law, this being the case. And a couple days ago when I went back, the posters were gone, though there were still a few smaller placards that were up there.
Man walking down to the encampment. It looks like there's significantly more canopy cover, at least, than when I was here on Friday. And, of course, the teepee is also covered. Looks like there's one teepee, and there were talks of a second.
For those who haven't been down to the encampment, there's this huge, like, 18-foot or 20-foot-high teepee around which are clustered. I found, actually, there were more than 30 little tents, small round tents, some of them bigger, some of them smaller. That was yesterday.
There's a large central area.
Hola.
And then there are a number of small tents spread up, counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and probably another few tents in different places. And this is where folks, I presume, are eating and preparing to crash for the night. I'm counting 17 tents, and
who do I spy over by the side of a large, spacious, looks like a four-person tent, but the, actually, 18 tents, a couple have been hidden in the way, but the, that famed musician and street performer,
Ricardo.
And Ricardo, here you are, in plain sight, illegally in the park after dark, with a tent, or you're sitting next to a tent. Are you, have you lost your senses?
No, we're fomenting the revolution right now as we speak. We're in touch with our masters in Beijing. Yep.
Aren't you? I thought you were part of the jihadist movement out of Kabul and the West Bank.
All of us, the enemies of liberty and freedom, are all united. Don't think that we're not. Yeah.
So yeah. How are things going with respect to the homeless community that's such as it is in San Lorenzo Park and the Occupy Santa Cruz group?
We were really talking about this article that we read, I believe it was in the New York Times earlier, where this one banker said, "Why, these are just a bunch of homeless people without jobs." And the guy who was writing the article said, "Very interesting. These people lost their jobs because of the actions of these bankers, and now they're complaining that they haven't got any jobs." And this other guy said, "Yeah, and they lost their houses in foreclosures, too." I said, "Yep, there you go. Homeless and houseless. Homeless and without jobs, and they're out here complaining."
I guess my question, because a couple days ago I was talking to folks over by the duck pond and the lawn bowling area, some of whom felt unwelcome to come here, or maybe some preferred not to. And is there any problems between Occupy Santa Cruz and homeless folks in the park, as far as you know?
No, not at all. In fact, over here, it's actually, this is county property, and no, most of the people who act, you know, who act normal are fine. You know, a lot of people are involved with this and helping out a lot. There are, of course, you know, in every, because of, they just turn open loose, you know, there are mentally ill people who are out here who really need to be helped, but they would rather just turn loose, give them a few bucks, here's your check. And really, they need more than that. They need some kind of shelter, someone to watch over them. And there are one or two of those people.
Are people who want to come crash here welcome to come? Or do they have to, for example, kind of person come and who's been drinking and crash out here, provided they're quiet and well-behaved?
You know, if they're quiet and well-behaved and go to sleep, nobody will know that they're drinking. I've been drinking, you know. But, yeah.
So, you are one of the drunks that's been infiltrated the camp.
No, not yet. Not yet. But no, the point is, people are here united of purpose. It's very, very interesting how focused they are. And people are policing themselves, keeping themselves clean, and the homeless and the non-homeless and the soon-to-be homeless are all working hard together to try and...
How long have you been here?
I was sitting up there. I finally decided, you know, I'm going to get my tent. So I called my friend, had him bring my tent down.
This is your tent you're sitting in front of?
Mm-hmm.
Large, spacious, was it a two-person tent?
Yes, me and my friend, we know each other for many, many years, and he lives over there by the radio station, KSCO. And so I keep things over there, especially like camping and things like that, because we both like that. And he goes up camping around California. We both love California. And he brought it down here, and we set it up and added our little light to the sum of light, put our queer shoulders to the wheel.
Well, we've been talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
I expect to hear some music and some sounds from you. New compositions, perhaps?
Perhaps so. We hope we'll find Coral Reef, and she'll play along with us because she's very talented.
Any comments about, I heard reports of Winston's hassling people by the Greek Orthodox Church. Any reports on that?
Winston is losing it. He's making things up, saying...
That's Officer Winston of the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Oh, you can't play here, but every 24 hours, or you can't play here for this, and writing tickets. Surely they have to notice that he's writing all these idiotic nuisance tickets on a Friday or a Saturday night. And because he's a person of small stature and always worried, he always carries another big plot along with him. Now, what I have to ask is, why is a high-ranking cop like that? I mean, can Santa Cruz afford that and a big plot to actually do the physical lifting and and caring or whatever for him. Can they afford that on Friday and Saturday night to go after nuisance tickets? And all people see is the cops harassing who they consider entertainers, who they're enjoying.
But it's Sunday night tonight. Have you heard of any tickets in the last few days?
Not that I know of, but the last few days I've been very, very focused right here and just run up and back real quick a few times.
Keep me advised if you...
I most certainly...
And by right here, he means in the encampment on San Lorenzo Park that is a part of Occupy Santa Cruz.
Well,
we again have been talking with...
Ricardo Lopez.
Thank you, Ricardo.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Peeking into the teepee tent here, and I'm seeing a number of people trying to get some rest and somebody providing a little musical accompaniment. Looks pretty comfy in here. And we'll just leave you guys to your musical solitude. So the court building that I mentioned that had the posters is actually the jury assembly room. That's the official title of this place. It used to be a courtroom. It used to be Robert Addick's court a couple years ago. Now it's a place where ordinary people are shanghaied into ratifying the prosecutorial judgments of the DA's office, often in the drug war. Sometimes there are, you know, it's hard to say the number of cases that are actually valid, that are brought to trial, that are worth the county's money, the city's money, the state's money, taxpayers' money. Hey, howdy. But so many are not that I find myself often quite cynical about the whole issue. Well, I'm talking with
Noah Shepherdson.
And Noah, you we're here about 7:15, and you say that yesterday when the large, or was it dozens, or was it hundreds? Who knows? We have to. Do you believe the Sentinel? Well, we want to get into that. But they came back to this point, your march to this point where we're standing in front of the county courthouse, and you say people, 50 people decided to, should we say, sit down on the street?
Well, there was about 50 people standing in the street from my perspective, from what I saw, and I don't know, maybe a dozen sat down in the street.
And what happened then?
Everybody was just kind of hanging out, standing there. The minutes started ticking away. And like I said, there was about at least a dozen people probably sitting down.
Were there a long line of cars backed up? Were the police ranting and raving? Or
the police, there was a couple of police on the foot of this side of the bridge, and there was more police visible in the distance on the other side of the bridge. We couldn't really see the traffic backed up, but everybody kind of, well, I shouldn't say everybody, the stage and the people on the stage with the microphone started asking everybody to get out of the road. Some wanted people to get out of the road, some wanted them to have their autonomy to do what they felt they needed to do, and
Well, David Silva called the show today, a free radio show, and said that Steve Plaich ordered people to get out of the road.
No, I wouldn't say that. He was definitely one of the people asking people to get out of the road, but, you know, he didn't try and force anybody. And
a militant tone, time to get out of the road, everybody? Or?
Not that I recall.
Okay, well, that, I don't know.
Yeah. But what it came down to ultimately was that, you know, those people obviously weren't going to just do what everybody else told them to do. They do have their autonomy to do what they feel is right. And when it came down to it, I believe they said when the police ask them to move, they will move. And so I think after about 15 minutes, a couple of police officers walked over and asked them to move. And
were they rerouting traffic out of another directions?
It wasn't clear to me when I had this interview with Noah on Sunday, but became clear, admitted by Steve Plaich yesterday when I spoke, was that Steve Plaich took the initiative to go over, apparently eager to get these guys to move, ask them what they want, what they wanted there, and they said, we're going to move until the police tell us to move, at which point Steve went over and told the police, they won't move unless you tell them to move. Again, I kind of can't believe that an activist would go do such a thing, but different people do different things.
I don't think we had vision of that from here. Like I said, there was police blocking the road all the way to the other side of the bridge.
What about traffic coming from this direction down into Santa Cruz along Water Street?
There was no traffic going, or there was no blockage going that direction.
It's only one lane of the of the road was blocked.
Yeah, it was only the eastbound traffic on Water Street.
Okay, so it was sort of more of a symbolic than a significant, you know, let's block everything and stop business as usual sort of thing.
I have no comment on that.
Very interesting. Was that the only point at which people sat down and stopped or lingered in the road, or were there other points at which this also happened?
Oh yeah, we took our sweet time marching to yesterday. It was a great thing, you know. Whenever we felt like the march was getting too spread out, we'd stop and dance for a minute and let everybody catch up. And yeah, we did that on Ocean Street. We did that on the I think it was Laurel Bridge, and did that on Pacific. We did that on the Water Street Bridge, you know, and
you made the town your oyster, so to speak.
You know, we just wanted to make sure that we were out there long enough for everybody to see that we are occupying Santa Cruz and that we're trying, you know, people need to see us to get an idea of what's going on. I mean,
I understand some people joined. In fact, there was a couple that just came that donated some food who said they joined the march because of the message you were propounding, or didn't go into a lot of detail, but it was something like that.
Yeah, that's what this is all about, you know, is just creating a space for the community to come together, you know, and there's been so much people just pouring in their support, and, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't even know about Occupy Wall Street or the Occupy movement or Occupy Santa Cruz, and, you know, they're going to. We're not going anywhere.
We've been talking with that immovable object,
Noah Shepherdson.
Thank you, Noah. So now it's a day later. It is the 17th of October, about 4:20, and I'm here at the front of the county courthouse, surrounded by an array of signs and an approaching sweaty-looking individual. Any comments, sweaty guy? Shakes his head. The same table is here, more signs than ever, a few rugs, free parking, join us now, we need 12-volt solar panel, ignore me, go shopping, eat the rich, taste like chicken, imagine a world without corporate greed, one life, one movement. And we're talking about, 10 or 15 folks that sort of spread out in different places.
How you doing? Yes, Isaac is still here.
Oh, no, it's Isaac the Lyrical Eye. Hey, guy with the Lyrical Eye. Any new words, any new thoughts, any new activities happening?
As of right now, everything's good. Everything's going peacefully, you know. Eric and I just been keeping my part going, and, you know, I'm just keeping the movement. I'm working on a new poem right now called The 99%. So I'm looking forward for the writing production of that, and that's pretty much it.
And have you, were you here last night?
I was here for a little bit, but I wasn't here the whole night. So I don't know what goes on, but I heard everything's been peaceful.
And the General Assembly is coming up at what time?
I'm guessing maybe 4 or 6 o'clock. I do not know yet.
Well, it's 4:20 now. So
I'm guessing it's like 6 o'clock.
Might be 6, although it was 2 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah, they switched names up.
But that was Sunday. You never could tell.
It's all good. They'll get organized.
All right, well, the beat goes on.
The beat does go on.
So we have more signs, which, again, are taking up the entire pavement and about half the stairway up to the county courthouse, and what is the unused and emergency entrance. Some of the signs read, woe unto nations where banks grow and people decay, jobs not cuts, take back our future, just crossed out saying give back our future, General Assembly every day at 6 p.m., kill capitalism before it kills you, unoccupy Afghanistan. And we're in this mess because we privatize profits and socialize costs. Socialism for the rich. My brother is a banker with a heart and a broken heart. Any assign? Hey, any reports from the front here?
It's all good.
And were you here last night?
I've been here since day one.
And no hassles?
None at all. The police are very professional and cooperative. They made simple, basic requests that if you follow, no issues.
What about the deputies?
Same with them. They've been very professional, very realistic in their demands, which they didn't put across as demands.
How about the bankers?
They suck.
No bankers here in solidarity, no guys with cash registers.
There was actually a 16-year-old kid that came here today and said he took all his money out of the Wells Fargo and was putting it in a credit union. So that's a good thing.
They didn't stop him?
No, not at all.
He didn't lock the door on
him? No.
They didn't drag him into the bank?
There wasn't 250 of him.
He didn't have any signs.
Right.
And what I'm referring to, of course, is the situation in... I guess it was a Bank of America in Santa Cruz where they wouldn't let people in to remove their deposits because they came with a group of protesters and he wouldn't even let them in individually. And there was another situation where there's a video online about a woman with a bunch of protesters in an Occupy who gets dragged, who wants to go and remove her account, and instead they won't let her in, then they drag her into the bank and arrest her. That's online. I have to find where it is. If anybody's interested, let me know. You can always call into the show if you have any comments on the ongoing Occupy Santa Cruz or homeless issues or other news-breaking stuff that you notice downtown you think isn't being covered. 427-3772 is the number here. And I invite you to do that. 427-3772.
So it's all good.
All right.
We've been talking. Beautiful day. We're going to have a general assembly, and there's wonderful people here. So come down and enjoy it.
We're talking with that master of propaganda,
Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Have a good one, Rob.
You're under your union.
I don't want to be interviewed.
You don't wish to be interviewed.
No.
We have a supporter, but, well,
no,
we'll hear from her.
For me, I've been interviewed, and they twist everything around every time.
Well, actually, I'm
Reporters.
What did I say?
Reporters. You're not a reporter.
Well, I am with Free Radio. I do
free
report.
Radio?
Yes.
Well, you could be anonymous, right?
All right, anonymous. Now, you say you'd like to see some speakers show up here?
Oh, he's recording.
Yes, of course I'm recording. I'm always recording. Her face is red as a beet. She backs off.
Yes, we would like some labor unions and some...
Do you have any connections? I mean, that might be a possibility to go and actually get them.
And actually, yesterday, SEIU reps, that's Service Employees International Union reps, who are the union that takes care of some of the city and county workers, showed up. I don't know if she was an official rep or simply somebody with an SEIU button, but she seemed very professional, very interested. So, and of course, our union organizers are about. I saw one, Paul, who's been at several of the gatherings when I was wandering by. So unions are taking an interest. And, of course, large union participation in some other cities like New York City. And of course, in Melbourne, where we've heard the police are beating up people. I don't know if they're trampling them with horses, but the horses are coming into the crowds. That's according to Twitter as of about an hour ago.
Well, her hip bone's connected to her what bone? She has connections, yes.
I hope so. She's, well, good. You know, get some speakers. We'd love them to come. At least I'd love them to come. I can't speak for anyone else.
I didn't know you always...
I'm out to be interviewed. Would you like to interview me? Here you go. Go ahead.
Are you glad to see this happening finally?
Well, yes, actually. Yeah. I would say so. Like, why not?
Would you
sooner
think,
the better.
Yesterday?
Yesteryear, actually.
Yeah. Time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you see more people coming into the ranks of from the middle class into the homeless?
That's a good question. You know, more people are here, and there's presumably more opportunity for contact, so that's good. You know. Continue your interview, perhaps. Ask me a question. She's looking. On a trio is playing about 5:30 in front of New Leaf. Looks like a trombone. No, a trumpet. Some kind of a crowd. Looks like a brass clarinet and a guitar. And you are there. Sounds like it is a clarinet, isn't it? And we have a group of folks. folks standing around, only four or five of them, including Mandel and Mark. As the shadows deepen on Pacific Avenue after another Indian summer day. The Borders building is still a large vacant space. Release by Neil Berkowitz, Gwen Shapira, and Newmark Knight Frank. Developers all, I would imagine. Perhaps just real estate guys. And we have a sign, restrooms closed due to vandalism on the two restrooms at the SoCal Avenue Garage. It says you may use Bookshop Santa Cruz, Pizza My Heart, Metro, Locust Garage, San Lorenzo Park, City Hall, or the library. Of course, if it's not late at night, in which case there are no open restrooms, except conceivably for the Homeless Service Center. I'd say restrooms closed due to all the money being spent to put up signs at and police the parking lots. Clear them out of bounds. Actually, I don't know that the parking lots are that policed. But there was signage put up. Presumably, there is a certain amount of money being spent on the, 25 publicly owned parking lots and garages downtown, clearing them out of bounds for people, even those who are drivers, to park in, socialize in, etc. Yes, the amount of energy I've expended denouncing this is kind of ironically amusing, because we had a probably just as bad a situation in the many years before, and we still had no real significant public assembly, partially because people aren't interested in publicly assembling, partially because other spaces like the parks are closed at night. We seem to have a new security service in white at the CVS, which is a Barton, Allied Barton service, security services, whoever they are.
And sorry for the dead air there. I got a phone call, and of course Mickey Mouse interrupted us briefly. Let's see if we can actually deal with that situation. It's going to take a little moment here while we catch up here. And that's yes. Here we go. I think we're back on the track.
Someone on the side of ridiculous. Access denied. It's been down.
Now, what we're going to hear now is the Monday evening ACLU presentations. Well, public comment by myself and Bob LaMonica at the board of directors meeting of the local American Civil Liberties Union. This is a board which primarily seems to be concerned with fundraising for different projects. Although, the one thing that came out of their meeting was a resolution of support for Occupy Santa Cruz, which is good, and I believe that was put forward by Steve Plaich. It's actually online at Occupy Santa Cruz, for those of you who want to go online and read it, and I believe I can find it here. Let me see if I can do that. Let's see here. Computer's a little slow. Yeah, it says ACLU supports Occupy Santa Cruz. Peter Gelbum and Jennifer Laskin, co-chairs, resolution in support of Occupy Santa Cruz. Whereas the American Civil Liberties Union has an ongoing stated mission to defend and preserve the Bill of Rights and the civil liberties guaranteed to every person in this country by the Constitution and laws of the United States. And whereas, by and through its more than 500,000 members, the ACLU stands opposed to restraints on civil liberties whenever they may occur, except, of course, against homeless people in Santa Cruz County, in which case we don't give a shit. Sorry, that's not part of the resolution. Continuing with the whereases. The whereas, the Santa Cruz County chapter of the ACLU has a long and cherished tradition of preserving and defending the individual rights and liberties of all those who work and strive for social justice, and whereas the Occupy Wall Street movement has mobilized thousands of Americans in a unified and common cause to create true economic opportunity on a global scale, and whereas Occupy Santa Cruz, here we go, at last, the second mention of the word Santa Cruz, local issue. The ACLU often has just a complete phobia or disinclination to address local issues. That's been my experience with them, generally, with a few exceptions. Whereas Occupy Santa Cruz has galvanized our community in an unprecedented action that reflects the finest principles of free speech and freedom of assembly, be it resolved that the Santa Cruz County chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union supports the efforts of Occupy Santa Cruz to work for social justice and create true economic change. You know, right on. Thank you, ACLU. I'll give you that. There are a couple of comments that are online on the Occupy Santa Cruz web, and let's see if we can see what they say. Bob LaMonica, who you're about to hear, is specifies. He writes, "Oh, let's see them address their history of not defending the Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz County. Until they do that, this is no better than a cover-up for 2.5 decades of dereliction of purpose and impediment to truth. They like the limelight, not the light of truth." And the second writer writes, "I concur." And a third writer writes, "Agreed. While I'd say that support is appreciated from all corners, I don't think I'm comfortable plugging any and all organizations, businesses that suggest such billing. Fortunately, we'll have a media content policy in place within the next couple of days, which will determine what is front page newsworthy and what is delegated to Section B." And I think I'll probably have to put a comment up there myself at some point because it's relevant. I think what you have here are the ACLU taking a cheap way out, and that includes Steve Plaich, who's the person who initiated this. He has had a number. He initially approached the board of the ACLU to become a board member many months ago, has been a board member for a number of months, and the board has been presented with a number of actual civil liberties issues, which I've presented. And I presented them not because I thought they would do anything, but because I let myself get entangled with the ACLU through Mr. LaMonica, who is, trying to, horsewhip the local ACLU in the hope that somehow that'll have some impact on them. Bob, I think, is in error, and he does what he thinks best. But it also does provide an opportunity to review the civil liberties violations in Santa Cruz that need to be addressed, but that are not addressed. And that is something that, I'm probably going to post this letter online on the Santa Cruz Indie Bay, Indie Media site. And let's see if I can, maybe I can read a selection or two from it. I did send them a letter way back in May, assuming I can actually get this computer to get to a new screen, which is always a trial. There are all kinds of issues that they were supposed to be addressing. I mentioned they were going to be, Steve Plaich was going to bring up smart meters, the issue of privacy in smart meters and how they impose on the privacy of people's homes more than the other kinds of meters, the issue of support for the for some kind of response to the lawsuit, which I have brought against the city council, which the city council's stalled all the way to the Supreme Court, which finally rejected their stall, and now they have to go to trial. Plaich apparently said, well, we can't do anything because the Supreme Court isn't going to review it. Of course, the answer is obviously they can do something like they just did. They can issue a statement supporting the right of people to come to Santa Cruz City Council and speak without being threatened with arrest or arrested for disruption when they're not being disruptive. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. But Steve didn't want to apparently risk his political cachet on that one. Likewise, Steve had previously said he was going to bring up an issue, a small issue of panhandling with dogs downtown, which is illegal. It's legal to have dogs, provided you're not a homeless person with a sign that says "need spare change" or "need food," which is outrageous. Although it's a very small part of the general outrage that the anti-homeless panhandling law has, which has very little to do with abusive panhandling and everything to do with clearing away panhandlers from the area, regardless of their behavior. The you know, and I had suggested take a broader one. This is a pretty trivial issue, but, you know, if you're going to do it, if that's the only one you got, well, go for it, I suppose. Nope, Steve withdrew all three of those issues from the ACLU agenda on Monday night. And it's just sad. Well, it's just typical of the ACLU and typical of people who get associated with the ACLU, that they are, they find their radicalism or their, even their, you know, straightforward liberalism, I mean, compromised by the likes of people like Mike Rotkin, who's the treasurer of the ACLU, and his partner, Marilyn McCall, who was an influential person in that board of directors meeting Monday night, pushing things forward. Move on, move on. Let's get on to the fundraising activity. And, you know, they're all for fundraising for what? Fundraising for, you know, there are some national issues I certainly agree with the ACLU on, you know, about the Patriot Act and Guantanamo and all kinds of, you know, broader issues. But in terms of local issues, if you don't defend civil rights locally, I've always said, your credibility nationally is, to me, severely compromised. Although, you know, I'm not going to say I oppose such things. But the problem is the same people who are repressing homeless civil rights, Mike Rotkin when he was mayor last year, are now suddenly, you know, making statements about civil liberties. It's distasteful, it's hypocritical, it's farcical, really. And unfortunately, I'm having trouble getting a screen so I can actually read you my my thoughts on the subject as I gave it to them. Although, actually, the screen just... I think it just came up. The question, though, is whether we have it here in time. Anyway, let's listen to Bob LaMonica talking about his concerns. And Bob is, frankly, I think he presents a position that's rather, in a way, rather absurd. And that was pointed out by the chair of the ACLU, co-chair Jen Laskin, who wouldn't support it. But she did the respect of allowing him to speak. And when Rotkin wanted to cut back oral communications time for everybody to 5 minutes, she held the line at 15. And I my hat's off to Jen for doing that. But afterwards, when I told her, it's obvious you and other members of the ACLU don't want to work on these issues, because if you had, you could have, any one of you could have individually brought one of the issues which I presented in specific detail 6 months ago to the ACLU. Actually, it was presented 20 years ago, but to this particular board 6 months ago, and they could have brought it in and, you know, at least voted it up or down. But, you know, none of that's happened. It's just more we're, you know, we're considering it, which is, it means we're not considering it.
I don't know, a year or more. What's the procedure on that regard, in regards to opaqueness? The reason why I'm here is that I'll give this 5 years, I'll be honest with you. I ain't going away. But I feel very strongly that this organization is not only in the way, but it actively blocks looking at serious allegations of abuse of power in law enforcement going back as far as 1987. And I used the example in an email yesterday about the Catholic Church, which has yet to admit any culpability with the Inquisition. That's 600 years. Now, you might want to play that game and pretend that you're above it all, but the bottom line is you have authority, you have power, people look to you, and you have co-opted your mission in such a serious fashion that to me the only way to rectify this is to be honest and go back to the historical record. But blowing everything off and saying that was 15 years ago or that was 6 months ago, alert us now, is really complicit. The issue that I would raise would be the complacent complicity of this organization. And the last example would be, the last clear example, would be the West Modes affair. And the ACLU was out getting a powder. You were giving an award to Ryan Coonerty, of all people.
The West Modes affair that LaMonica is referring to, of course, is the city's pursuit of activist Sub Rosa worker and free school organizer and one-time trash orchestra organizer, drum circle supporter, West Modes, who was the only person actively prosecuted for walking in the New Year's Eve do-it-yourself parade 2009, right before 2010 came in. And it was, you know, it was a case the city council, with presumably with Rotkin's support, because at least he didn't say he opposed it, after delaying any consideration of it in closed session, it was brought up, and the city attorney was turned loose on this issue, and they took it to a conviction for walking in a parade. And LaMonica's point is the ACLU did nothing about it. And that was, well, over a year and a half ago. And at the last DIY parade, the police took no action. There have been no tickets that I've heard of since. So in a way, the publicity that we've put out on this issue, the rage that we've shown, the exposure that we've subjected the authorities to has been successful. But the ACLU has taken no official position. That's Bob's point. He was using it as an example of how hypocritical and contradictory to its supposed concerns the ACLU actually is.
During this affair where this guy is branded in the press as the organizer, he is nailed by the police as a participant. He is convicted and charged as a participant, and the ACLU is nowhere to be found. It still says on your website, defending the Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz County. Now, I've been in this county for quite a while. I've never seen it. I understand that Mr. Norris was one example back in the early 90s. I've never seen it. I've never seen the ACLU do what it's supposed to do, which is to stand up to abuse of power, especially when it emanates from law enforcement. What I'm asking, and you do events, you put together events, there's a lot of sharp people on this very small board, it's easy to put together events, you put together events when you want to. Allow me to have a part of an event open to the public where I can address local application of values in the Santa Cruz chapter of the ACLU and go back through some history. I guarantee you it won't be boring, and it's important. The stuff that people need to know that should not be blown off. And once again, I use the example of the Catholic Church refusing to acknowledge its role in the Inquisition. If we were to pick between the Catholic Church, and I'm not trying to justify the Holocaust, but what the Germans did and continue to do, which is to try to address it to the best of their ability, above board, we did this. It wasn't just the perpetrators. It happened to our culture as a whole.
What is it that you want?
Yeah, and of course, what Bob wants, that's Olga, a member, board member, calling out and asking, what is it you want? Bob wants a kind of re-education, a kind of reconciliation, a kind of admission of guilt by the ACLU for its failure to defend the civil liberties of local people throughout the last two decades, generally speaking. And, you know, in a way, that's quite something to ask. And to me, it sounded kind of outrageous at the time. And I thought Bob was shooting far too high. And it sounded like kind of like he was a fanatic and there's no point to it. But as I hear it now, it doesn't sound so far-fetched to me. Although, you know, it's not something the ACLU would accept. You'd probably have to have a separate organization do that who wants to expose what the ACLU is doing. But if the ACLU members who are genuinely concerned with civil liberties actually wanted to, you know, set the record straight, they could. To me, more important than setting the record straight is to take issues that are currently civil liberties abuses, you know, like the harassment of homeless people for sleeping in their ticketing, like the people being jailed for protesting on behalf of those homeless people, Gary Johnson, Ed Fry, Linda LeMaster, Chris Doyen, and actually 40 other people whose names are less well known. Convictions for singing on Pacific Avenue homeless songs, that's me, Becky, and Robert Facer. There's all kinds of civil liberties abuses that are current that need to be addressed. You don't need to spend a lot of money addressing them. Even just making a simple statement, this is wrong, this is a violation of civil liberties, would be a way of at least putting the ACLU on the record. But they don't want to do that, I think. And that primarily, I think they want to do it because they have people who have committed their political power to often being a part of the repressive apparatus. Rotkin is notorious for this. He actually tried to shut down protests at City Hall at night to make sure that one could not hold up a sign at City Hall at night. Ironically, he succeeded last year in doing that, where the courts refused to accept that when he sought an injunction against a protest. The Parks and Rec did it behind the scenes. The Parks and Rec, Czarina, as I call her, Danette Shoemaker, did that illegally, going past the Parks and Rec Commission and creating an ordinance. If you look on the City Hall grounds, you'll now see signs that say no one can be there after 10 o'clock at night, area closed, which would, of course, close off the area to protest. So while I'm concerned with present abuses more, and Bob is concerned with a cleansing, is really seems to be what he's looking for. I can understand, you know, why he wants that. Again, going back to Monday's ACLU meeting where he was speaking.
He wants to speak.
You're not going to get anywhere about this. You're going to make this comment.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No.
What did you hear?
He wants to do nothing. It's not old, and he's going to speak until 7:20.
Let him make his comment.
Okay.
What do I want?
Yeah.
I want to address the public, sponsored by the ACLU, on the following topic. Santa Cruz Chapter ACLU Local Application of Values.
And you want to go through a history, just to clarify, clarifying question. You want to review a history of how this board has not done it. You want us to sponsor an event where you bring up a history comparing us to the Catholic Church and not taking responsibility.
Use that as an example.
And you want us to sponsor that?
That's right. That would save your face. Because one way or another, this stuff is going to come out. Because I ain't going away.
Well, it's already out.
I'm telling you. And you're going to be petitioned from me on a regular basis.
Well, then it's an opinion. I have to say it's an opinion that's out, but not that everybody agrees with you. But go on.
You are a dereliction of duty is the fundamental charge here. And there's no way to blow it off. And I bring up the West Moses affair as the most recent example. And you can smile and shine me out and do whatever you want. But the bottom line is there was an example when this organization should have stood up and refused to, out of cowardice. So I offer a solution, a help, a way to mend, a way to make amends, a way to reconcile. Allow history to be addressed. History is who we are.
What's stopping you from doing that without the blessing of this board?
It's going to happen through this group. I'm here today. I've been petitioning this for a while.
See, here I think Bob is making unlikely demands that, and again, this is one of the disagreements I have with him and with others who want groups themselves to take responsibility for self-criticism. I think what's needed is another group that actually has the same interest and resources, legal resources, as some ACLU members have currently, but also has the motivation and the courage and the lack of political entanglement to actually push some of these issues in either, you know, I say at least in the forum of public opinion, and then if necessary in the courts and in the streets. We have perfect forums in the streets in the Occupy Santa Cruz situation to bring these issues up. In fact, I may be doing that myself as time goes on.
That's true. And it won't be boring. Santa Cruz Chapter, ACLU, Local Application of Values. Will it?
Well,
I mean, unless you think that the DA being involved in a drunken car wreck and the victim's blood is tested, is not interesting.
The dead DA.
Oh, yeah, he's dead. Okay, the Catholic Church and all the dead Jews of the Holocaust, Mike, let's forget about that.
And what Bob is talking about here is an affair that happened in 19, I think it was 87 or 88, when former DA, then judge, now deceased, Art Danner, hit somebody in a vehicle accident, but he, instead of him being drug tested or alcohol tested, they instead tested the other person and let him get away scot-free, and that was quite a scandal at the time.
Yeah, right? But that's not really the point.
Let's not talk about anything that didn't happen 24 hours ago.
Your points aren't making much sense into the issue at hand, which is you want us to sponsor an event where you bring up the history of the local application of values of this ACLU board.
Failure.
We'll discuss it.
Yeah, you do that. And like I said, I'll give this 5 years. All right?
We'll discuss it. I will never support it.
That's fine. But you will know that you were petitioned as a way to make amends for the absolute failure and complicity of this organization. You are actually in cahoots with law enforcement and abusive power time and time and time again for over 25 years.
And that may sound a little paranoid in cahoots, but if there's an organization that continues to be silent when people are shot dead like Happy John Dine, you know, when homeless people are harassed by the hundreds and ticketed and jailed for sleeping, crimes they can't can't avoid, for actions they can't avoid that are called crimes, as part of a run-them-out-of-town campaign, then the illusion is created that the ACLU finds no real problem here, or at least it certainly doesn't want to say anything negative about it. And so, in a way, it is a form of collusion. It's a form of silent collusion, collusion through silence. It's not active collusion, but it can be construed as collusion.
You still have 6 minutes.
Okay. Well, no, it's a point of order. I think Bob's made his point articulately, and we should take that under advisement, and we should discuss it and decide whether or not we agree that that's something we'd like to do. Seems perfectly reasonable to me.
I think, Steve, I can't believe Steve is being serious here, and that's what makes me increasingly mistrustful of people who take a political role. But who knows? It's hard to say. Steve is the master, fashions himself as a politician. That's the voice of Steve Plaich you were hearing there. I have a lot more respect for someone like Jen Laskin, who speaks out. You know, she tries to make sure that Bob and Monica has an opportunity to speak at this meeting, but she tells him she thinks he's full of shit. I think Bob is wasting a lot of energy on this group, but I don't think he's full of shit. But I think she at least is being honest in her feelings, whereas Steve is playing the diplomat and making the good appearance of, well, we've given him a chance and we should talk about it, when in fact I think he has no intention of any serious discussion of this proposal.
I've heard it. Oh, well, one last point I might make. This is from a letter that I got from the ACLU. It says here, for 90 years now, the ACLU has taken on the task of defending the Constitution and the fundamental freedoms that it protects. We stand on principle, fight for what we believe in, and never stop working until we win. Well, bring this to Santa Cruz. You have the audacity to put defending the Bill of Rights of Santa Cruz County on your website? Do it. And do it by reconciling your own history, which is corrupt and false. Thank you, Bob. Robert?
And that is, in a way, Bob sounds like he's talking to an audience that isn't there, to an audience of history rather than the audience of the ACLU board members, who would only be antagonized by what he's saying and sort of reject it. And that's okay. It's okay to talk to history if you understand that you're not really going to get anywhere. And that may be why I'm a little bit concerned. I don't know how much Bob realizes that he's not getting anywhere, and he probably does. And Bob is a regular caller to the show and a regular listener, so he may be hearing me even now. You never can tell. Anyway, let's hear that wonderful speaker, Robert Norris. He's next.
I just wanted to ask as a point of procedure. I'm going to skip smart meters, North versus Santa Cruz, downtown dog ordinances, and homeless evacuation in Watsonville, as well as Occupation Santa Cruz, all of which I may have, with the board's permission, something that I could contribute, just talk about a couple of things, which you've already received a letter about in May, so I just wanted to kind of...
Those were all other items on the agenda. There's sort of a custom in these parliamentary situations that you, during the public comment period that's the open period, you don't talk about issues that are on the agenda, because then when the agenda item comes up, you can talk about those particular issues, and you don't repeat yourself. What happened here, of course, was after I'd given my speech about things, all the other things but the Watsonville relocation of the homeless, the Occupy Santa Cruz endorsement, the smart meters, the lawsuit about city council repression, you know, and the dogs and the panhandlers, as they removed all those items off the agenda or to the end of the agenda, or they tabled them so that there was no discussion of them. And that, to me, is pretty near to a dishonest action. But, you know, what it really showed me was what I thought before I came in there several years ago. Someone always brings up in the Huff meetings, go to the ACLU, they'll help out, because they have this fantasy that the ACLU, which has quite a reputation historically for for various civil liberties fights, will do something about civil liberties problems in Santa Cruz for poor people. And, of course, they don't. They aren't interested. And Steve Plaich has the idea of infiltrating the ACLU by getting board members on that are sympathetic and then slowly changing things from within. And I think, again, the basic error of this is that the the whole mechanism that's currently in force will slowly change those who get into the ACLU into a further right-wing, non-civil libertarian position locally. And that's, I think, what's concretely happened to Plaich and Jen Laskin. Maybe other people in the ACLU who weren't even present but might have spoken up.
Recapitulate or mention it again. Bob is very passionate about this stuff, and some things draw his attention, which don't so much draw mine, but I think his broader point is that the ACLU's local history in terms of dealing with local issues is one which a lot of us have looked on with despair, and or certainly with severe disagreement. So I suggested a couple things you could do, concrete things, Olga, for example. There's current prosecutions coming up for Chris Doyen and Linda LeMaster for a political protest of a year ago involving homeless people, which involves the law 647E, and this is relevant to what Steve will be bringing up later, which has to do with the fact that the same kinds of threats are being...
But Steve didn't bring it up later, I don't think. So again, I was relying on something that didn't happen. Again, it doesn't really matter because they wouldn't have paid much attention anyway. But I guess we're sort of, I don't know, we're enacting a drama for another era, maybe some era in the future that's watching this.
...against dozens of protesters in front of the county building now by the deputies. So that's something I suggest you look at, and I won't say more about it because it's been mailed to you. I don't know if you've gotten this letter, but it's good for us, you did?
Yes, I sent it to everybody last
week. Excellent, thank you, appreciate that. Thank you for...
Now, the letter which they sent out last night to the ACLU board had actually been sent in May after I'd had extensive email interactions with Peter, who was the co-chair of the ACLU. And he told me, oh, why don't you just write directly to the board your concerns? And once I sent it to the board, it was returned that I could not put it up. So it was blocked for 6 months. And it was... That's the background to this letter. The letter talks about opposing the current prosecutions of homeless activists Gary Johnson and Linda LeMaster, both facing a year in jail for protest actions in the Peace Camp 2010 protests. City Attorney's Office is heavily involved in, if not the motive force behind these prosecutions, and they include Christopher Doyen. And my point that I just made was that 647E, the law they're being prosecuted under, is the one that's now being used to threaten Occupy Santa Cruz folks. So it's quite relevant, but... Of course, not up for discussion by our local ACLU.
I'll show you some of these, and I'll send it to you, Mike, if you like. I'm going to urge this. You could urge the city to reopen the city hall, library, and police station grounds at night, which were unilaterally and illegally closed last fall, in my view, not just unconstitutionally, but illegally, because the Parks and Rec did it without consulting with the Parks and Rec Commission, as required by the city ordinance. But more important, this was done to stop protests at that time. And I suspect it's likely to prompt more conflict with the police if, for example, Occupy Santa Cruz decides to come and do protests at the city hall, which is a possibility. I would suggest you support Public Records Act requests, as the Northern California ACLU did in 2006. I'm reading from this, but I think it bears bringing up.
That was when the police chief, current police chief, Kevin Vogel, authorized illegitimate political surveillance of activists planning a peaceful demonstration. And then when this scandal broke, the people that were in the police department who were supposed to, you know, look over what went down and review it for whether it was appropriate or not, he himself was appointed to review his own actions. He found that he acted properly, and the mayor and the city manager all agreed. And the ACLU locally did nothing whatsoever. The people concerned about this issue had to go to the Northern California ACLU to get any kind of action, the ACLU that was not in the area.
We can review this later to determine the extent of selective enforcement of various laws downtown. I've already done a request to the police department around the sitting ban. They tried to keep the information from me of what... Who is getting ticketed under the sitting ban? That's the law that says you can't sit down on 95% of the sidewalks on Pacific Avenue. That's within 14 feet of a building, monument, kiosk.
But I have some good news on that. I believe I actually got an email in the mail today from the police department, the Santa Cruz Police Department, which has an attached report which actually gives me, after a month and a half or thereabouts, maybe closer to a month, the addresses of the people who were given tickets on Pacific Avenue for sitting down. My point in seeking this public record was to find out if police seem to be ticketing primarily poor and homeless people, and so whether there might be an appropriate selective enforcement concern raised to get an injunction against this kind of a law, or at least to expose publicly and document what the police are doing. And I'm opening this document now, which I received today, actually received it a few hours before the show. I'm not quite sure when I got it, but it's apparently a long document, so it's taking its time opening up. Looks like it's opening now. So that's something the ACLU could have considered, and I talked about that, and you'll hear a little bit more of me talking about that.
Finally, by going to the First Amendment Coalition and sending them an additional request, I got Patricia Houston to agree to give us the addresses, which I think will indicate that it's almost always homeless people that are getting these tickets. And this is something ACLUs and other cities have been concerned about. So I think you might want to be concerned about this here. I think you might examine and oppose the harassment of street performers. The city's prosecution of three of us for singing the song Downtown with homeless lyrics midday in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, which Mike was on the city council when that was brought to closed session, prompted the longest infraction trial in Santa Cruz history, which was supported by city funds. It was done by a private citizen, but the city attorney went in there to support this nonsense. And we were convicted. But I think it was ridiculous. We're convicted of conspiracy to disrupt the bookshop Santa Cruz, which we've never done, we never intend to do. And anyway, I mean, the point is that was a concern of mine. There are unusual procedures at city council which deny members of the public the right to speak on consent agenda items unless given permission by the city council, except for a small 2-minute period, which usually may involve up to 10 to 30 items of the city council agenda. This is an issue I'm bringing up in the Morris versus Santa Cruz lawsuit. A very important issue for homeless people is the seizure of homeless property. That happens in spite of the fact that state law requires authorities to hold property they take. They dispose of it. Parks and Rec admits it disposes of homeless property. I got that from none other than the main ranger, John Wallace, who was doing this disposing when he was a chief ranger. Unless the policy has changed, the city is vulnerable in Kincaid's case, which I believe the ACLU in Fresno was involved in.
Yeah.
So I propose you select one of these. You don't choose all of them. Just one or two cases, possibly the ones that are already on your agenda. Having to do with, you know, at least, although the downtown dog ordinances, though it's the most recent, is certainly one of the most trivial of these issues. I mean, human beings are being arrested for holding up a sign after dark that says, need food. That's illegal in Santa Cruz, just holding up a sign after dark. Anywhere in the city, it is illegal, under the Panhandle ordinance passed, as you know, Mike, under the city council in 1994, and then amplified in 2002. So, finally, I was amazed to hear that the ACLU is not defending its own canvassers. And I know that they're not hired directly by you, but they're ACLU. They have ACLU on their T-shirts. They go out and try to talk to people in the Trader Joe's parking lot. The Pruneyard decision would seem to guarantee them at least one spot to be able to do this in that shopping center area. But the property manager has told them they must leave or face arrest. Hence, they don't go there anymore. This is a bad precedent to set in a city like this. I mean, it was in Cupertino right over the hill when the Pruneyard decision was actually initiated in 1979, guaranteeing people the right, because of the California Constitution, you know, to be able to, at least in some places, in a parking, in a private parking lot, shopping center area, have a place to be. So these are all issues that I brought many of them to this group in February of this year. And some of you were here. You were here, Mike. You were here, Jen. Steve, you were here. I should be here in that little bit. And nothing has been done. I know you guys are busy and you have all kinds of other things to do. like plan events to do fundraising and, you know, talk about national issues. But I think the strength of the ACLU for me has always been its relevance to local.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. And I encourage you to hear.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion that we consider the fundraiser.
This is a motion by Madeline McCall, Mike Rotkin's partner. I'm not sure if it's his wife or his partner, but it's a person closely associated with him, who essentially moves that they put all this stuff aside, all these issues, and instead work on a fundraiser for the ACLU. And that's what they did.
Second. Out of order.
Second.
And at that point, I turned off the tape recorder, which was an open tape recorder. I wasn't recording people and not letting them know what I was doing. Anyway, that's the ACLU, as usual, useless. And I can talk more about it, and I have had some, you know, acrimonious or some rather critical letters back and forth with an ally, Jen Laskin, which is a pity. But if somebody talks shit to you, you've got to clarify what's going on. And we've had our disputes. Jen's a great activist in many other fields, but like Steve Plaich, when you start, you know, getting stuck in the mud of existing groups that are the antithesis of what they're supposed to be, and that actually help to deny the rights, or at least ignore abuses around the rights of people, and claim to be guardians of those rights, you got real problems, and it's needs to be exposed and criticized, even if it means you can no longer be so friendly with those people. And that's too bad. That's too bad. Let's hear a little more of the... What I really want to do is read a little bit from the... There was a Cincinnati decision, which I sent out, and I may try to post at Occupy Santa Cruz, in which the judge upheld an injunction requiring the city of Cincinnati to keep the park open for protesters. And I guess I don't really have time to do that because we're coming up against the clock and Uncle Dennis is here, due to come here shortly and should be here, you know, I don't know where he is. He's probably speeding over here even as we speak. So that'll have to wait till my next show, which is presumably Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. I did have another brief announcement. And that is, I got an email from Tony Ciampi. And Tony Ciampi is the activist who was pepper sprayed and dragged out of his vehicle. And then the judge dismissed all the charges, which they cooked up against him. And he sued the city. And he wrote me a letter. I invited him to come on the show because earlier he sent me a letter with a concern about Palo Alto attempting to do away with to make it illegal to sleep in your vehicle, as it is in Santa Cruz now. But Palo Alto has been a city where it's not, up to now, been illegal to sleep in your vehicle. He wrote me this letter earlier today, in which it's actually, it's CC'd to me. It's addressed to the Palo Alto Police Chief, Dennis Burns. And Tony writes, "I was informed yesterday by some homeless man that one of your subordinate officers made contact with him at approximately 2 a.m. in the morning of October 19th. The homeless man was awakened out of a deep sleep while camping in the doorway to the downtown library. From what I was told, the medium height and overweight Caucasian Palo Alto police officer specifically woke this homeless man up with a specific intent of asking him if he knew anything about me. If that is true, I want to know why you are expending scarce city resources in order to obtain information about me from homeless people and others. What investigation are you conducting on me, and what justification do you have for doing so? Are you retaliating against me for simply speaking the truth? If you want, we can have a community meeting where you can defend yourself against my accusations and allegations that you knowingly and intentionally submitted falsified evidence to the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office with the intent to incriminate me of a crime using that falsified evidence." We're talking about a falsified videotape that was made when, in order to justify the cooked-up charges against him when they tased him for not coming out of his vehicle when he had a perfect right to stay in his vehicle because they had no criminal charges, and he had a perfect right not to talk to the two police officers who came to harass him. Tony continues, oh, that's right, you don't like open and transparent meetings where you and your position can be tested by the crucible of facts and cross-examination. You'd like to manipulate the public with your propaganda and secret meetings unchallenged and unopposed. If you are up to it, great. Don't send any officers to inform, so just give me a call or send an email. I should add that if the city of Palo Alto passes its vehicle habitation ordinance, and I want to talk more about that in future shows, the city and residents will see a whole lot more eyesores sleeping on the ground next to their houses and businesses. And I sent him a letter kind of inviting him to be on the show, telling him I was going to read his update, and that I wondered how things were going with Occupy Palo Alto. And he wrote, hey, Rob, thanks for the call. I've been fairly busy. I'm not up to speed on the Occupy Palo Alto campaign. However, no one is camping out. I will say this, it won't be long, for Palo Alto is an epicenter of the 1%. And if the Occupy movement wants to make a statement, then occupiers from all over the Bay Area should head to Palo Alto and set up camp in the hometown of several billionaires and hundreds of multimillionaires who want to outlaw homeless people from using their vehicle as a shelter. These people have outlawed panhandling on median strips, a sit-lie ordinance, and gentrified numerous low-income citizens over the years. They have raised virtually every economical business from downtown Palo Alto, and thus you hardly ever see people of color from neighboring cities patronizing Palo Alto businesses, unless, of course they earn $250,000 or more a year. And that's from Tony Ciampi today in an email to me. So I'm going to play a little bit more of the Occupy Santa Cruz interviews of the last few days that I've been fortunate enough to get. And I'll continue playing them on Sunday, I would imagine. Who knows? Maybe I'll actually have a guest to add a little exciting debate and interaction here. I'd hope to have Kerbugger Chris on. Linda LeMaster said she might stop by. But it's been me in the studio. But let's hear a little bit more, and then I'll be followed, presumably, by Uncle Dennis from The Cream to the Dregs. I think he's in the area. At least I hope he is. We'll see.
Okay, well, it is October 19th, 2011. It's around 10:15. This is a... It would be a beginning of a HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, except all the people are out protesting. Can you imagine? I'm just sitting here alone at this table in the basement of the county building. But I ran into Michelle, who was at the Occupy Santa Cruz table in front of the county building. Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
And you had plates of cookies there, which looked tempting, but I'm still waiting for my appetite to develop this morning. How long have you been in the area?
About 6 weeks.
And you're taking care of your 94-year-old aunt?
Yes, I'm currently the caregiver. I am from Northport, Florida. Who knows
Welcome.
How long I'll be here. I don't know. Time will tell.
And you've found it sort of remarkable. Well, some extremes of wealth you've noticed here that, you know, you're perhaps you may talk about later, you may not. But you yourself experienced quite a ride with what corporation?
Heritage Propane of Helena, Montana. I worked at the office of Horizon Gas in Northport, Florida.
What kind of work did you do?
I read propane gas meters.
And that meant you would go door to door?
Yes, house to house, street to street.
So you'd be installing, checking out those smart meters now?
No, we didn't have smart meters. I actually, at one time I had a handheld computer, but it went in the garbage can and I continued to write pen and pencil.
So you were at this for how many years?
17 years. December 3rd, 1993, I was hired.
And then and suddenly one day in 2009.
August 7th of 2009, I had just returned from a 16-day vacation with my child and was told that I no longer had a job. In the 17 years, I had missed one day.
Did you get a gold watch?
No. In fact, I had 407. What they did was they paid out my vacation time, which was like 22 hours, a couple floating holidays. I had 475 hours of sick pay that they refused to pay, saying it was accrued and not earned. There was no severance, although I have sources that told me that six CEOs walked with $40 million. Everybody that was laid off was over 50 with benefits.
And you are?
I am 53.
And good looking, I might add.
Thank you.
Relevant, though that may be. So you've noticed some recent activity on behalf by this company that you commented on as we walked into the building.
Oh, I just had to chuckle because 3 days ago, AmeriGas took over Heritage Propane. May all the rest of the CEOs get their dues.
Do you think there were a lot more firings and layoffs?
Oh, I'm sure there's across-the-board layoffs, starting with 50 and over with benefits, long-term people that, you know, punch the clock.
Now, you didn't even have a contract, or what kind of an agreement did you have during this 17-year period?
There was no agreement. It was just they hired me, and I just worked.
No union.
No, there's very few.
Anyway, that tape will be continued on Sunday when Mr. Norse re-enters the studio.
Cheater.
Cheater?
Cutting me off. Cutting off.